welcome to the State of Kentucky. I'm Bruce Maples, publisher of Forward Kentucky, and today we are going to interview Jason Bailey, who is the executive director of the Kentucky Center for Economic Policy. Jason and the center have been talking about the upcoming budget session in the General Assembly and how the Republican supermajority is taking the wrong approach to how we should deal with our money, stuffing it into the mattress instead of spending it on Kentuckians. Before we begin, I'd like to encourage you to click the subscribe button down below. We are trying to increase our number of subscribers, and that way you'll know whenever we do a new video, either a State of Kentucky or a Moving Kentucky Forward or a Bruce's Take, which of course is from me. Without further ado, let's hear from Jason Bailey. So we're here today with Jason Bailey, who is executive director of one of the most important institutions in the state of Kentucky, the Kentucky Center for Economic Policy. Jason, welcome to the state of Kentucky.
Yeah, thanks, Bruce. Appreciate you having me.
Well, I wanted to have you on to talk about the upcoming session and the budget stuff that you have been warning us about. Sometimes I feel like you must feel like Cassandra. You have the ability to see into the future, but can't get people to listen sometimes. So tell us about the rainy day fund, the budget, what are they doing in Frankfort and why is it wrong?
Yeah, so I think to understand that story, we have to go back a little bit in time and think about what's been happening for a couple of decades, and particularly since the Great Recession hit. We've been seeing a lot of budget cuts to school funding, to higher education, to public health and social services. And we had said round after round of that after 2008. Gradually, the economy increased in strength, but it was very slow. And then, of course, we had COVID hit. So we had another really harsh recession. But that was a lot different than the Great Recession for one reason. The federal government actually did its job in providing aid and stimulus during that downturn. And actually, we actually reduced poverty. Child poverty was cut in half temporarily during the pandemic because of that aid. One of the secondary effects of that assistance to people, you know, the cash assistance, the expanded unemployment benefits, the food assistance, was that as people spent that money in the economy, it stimulated state tax growth. So the state taxes, the sales taxes, the income taxes, and so forth, you contribute to the state government, didn't falter. In fact, they increased pretty dramatically. So it's a real different picture than it's been for a very long time, and then we have some revenues for now. But when the legislature passed the last budget, the last two-year budget, they did not increase spending commensurately. They didn't try to bring back or roll back some of those cuts that had been made after the Great Recession or meet any other needs that we might have. They really held back and passed a very austere budget. And so where did that money go? Well, it sort of went into the rainy day fund. Which is it's exactly what it sounds like. It's a fund we've had for a very long time that is there for emergencies. But the legislature is putting a lot of money into that now. It is going to reach $5 billion in that fund by this summer. That's more than double what the state would actually need to help prepare for the next downturn. And if they continue to pass a budget that is austere as the last budget, over the next 2 years, when they meet in January, in the next session, it will just keep getting bigger and bigger. And it will reach probably close to $8 billion by the end of the biennium, if they continue on the path that they're on. Even while we have a teacher shortage, we have a bus driver shortage, we have childcare about to lose a bunch of federal money and already too hard to find in most of the state. We have an affordable housing crisis. We have an opioid crisis. We have other things where state budget is a really important tool that we need to deploy to deal with those. And we actually have the money to do it right now. But it's a question of whether the legislature will allow that to happen.
So, just for the sake of people who are listening who aren't deep into the details like some of us are, we have two budgets basically. We have a road fund and we have a general fund. Our general fund budget is roughly how big?
It's about $15 billion annually.
Okay. And 15 billion annually. And so if they get to 8 billion, they will have a rainy day fund that's over 50% of 1 year's general fund. I seem to remember some years ago, our rainy day fund was very low. It was basically depleted. And I wrote an article at that time about what a rainy day fund should be. And I want to say that it was 20 to 25% of your budget was a roughly recommended rainy day fund. Is that correct or am I off?
That's a very, very good rainy day fund. I think 15% is also a very good rainy day fund. It's a little hard to predict, but we had one of the biggest downturns in the history of this country in COVID. And how much rainy day fund money did we have to spend? Zero,
Yeah.
because Congress did its job. So it depends on what Congress does. I don't think we can count on them. So we need a rainy day fund. But to have half your budget in a rainy day fund, it's a little bit like putting money in your mattress when your roof is leaking. And
Yes.
that's what's happening across the state. I mean, it's good to save money, it's good to have savings, but it is past the point of being excessive now, and especially if they budget that way the next 2 years. And what's the reason for that? I mean, why would we be building so much and really having so much money sit idle when there are such pressing needs across the Commonwealth?
So, okay, so answer that question for me. Why are they doing this? What's their end goal here?
So the reason they're doing that and prioritize putting so much money aside is because of the parallel priority that the General Assembly has had, which is to limit to lower and eventually eliminate the individual income tax, which provides about 40% of all general fund revenue. So the individual income tax has been around since the 1930s, but starting in 2018, the legislature has begun a process to lower it. It had a top rate of 6% for over 8 years. It's dropped to 5%, and then went to 4.5% in January. And this January coming up, it will go down to 4%. Those cuts are extraordinarily expensive when you're talking about a half point cut in your largest revenue source. And so what the legislature is doing is trying to stockpile money to prepare for the impact of that. But ultimately, and they created a formula that they say gives them permission to make those cuts that requires they spend far less than they bring in. But ultimately, you can't, these are permanent cuts, and the rainy day fund is one-time money. And when it's gone, it's gone. So it's not going to work to fill the hole that is being created, particularly if they continue to reduce the individual income tax and continue to budget with that in mind.
So it seems so irresponsible to be cutting 40% of your income, trying to get rid of 40% of your income. And yet, the individual income tax, getting rid of the income tax at the state level, who does that benefit? Well, it only benefits, as far as I can tell, the wealthy. And so basically, without putting too fine a point on it, they are starving our schools, our colleges, our childcare, and so on and so forth, in order to give money to people who already have quite a bit. Would that be a fair statement?
I think that's exactly what the impact is. When you reduce the income tax, two-thirds of the money goes to the top 20% of people. If you're a millionaire, you're getting, over $10,000 in a tax cut every single year. If you're a typical working class person in the Commonwealth, you might be getting enough for one cell phone bill. But meanwhile, what's happening to the rural hospital in your community if we reduce funding for Medicaid? What's happening to your schools, which are, and especially in rural areas, are heavily dependent on state dollars? What's happening to the other infrastructure that you need, your access to broadband, all the other things that a community needs that are funded by the state? They won't be possible if we continue down this path of trying to eliminate the income tax. One state has ever eliminated their individual income tax, and that's Alaska. And they did so only after they struck oil. We haven't struck oil in Kentucky. No one has found that. So it's just not possible. In fact, so the legislature created this mechanism or this formula to try to that they think tells them that it's okay to continue to cut the income tax. That formula, the triggers in that formula were not met this summer. So there won't be another income tax cut the following year. So that's only the second year in which that formula has been in effect, and they didn't hit it. And why didn't they hit it? Because it's difficult to cut your largest revenue source and also be responsible to the people in your community and your state. You would have had to cut education funding even more. You would have had to say no to the flood victims in Eastern Kentucky and just say, nope, we're not going to step in and help repair bridges and prepare schools and other things that they did appropriate some money for. You would have had to say no more often, and they already aren't able to do that. So I think it's an unrealistic and undesirable goal to try to get rid of your largest revenue source. The money, as you say, the bulk of which doing so goes to those at the top, and they're already faltering in that effort. So my hope is that, in the upcoming General Assembly, I think there's been a lot of talk, this last year about school funding problems, for example. We put out a report a couple months ago showing that the gap in funding between wealthy and poor school districts has now surpassed the level that was declared unconstitutional in the 1980s.
Right.
You look at school funding, if you look at the educator shortage, our ability to attract and retain teachers and bus drivers, if you look at, the waiting list for people with disabilities to get the services that they want, that they need, is long and getting longer. There's just a lot of unmet needs because, again, we never did roll back those cuts from the Great Recession. So there are just a lot of unmet needs. And my hope is that this failure hit the trigger this summer will send a message that, there's only so much cutting you can do. You got to also make sure that you're responsible to the people in your community and that you're funding the things that they need, and that we see a budget that includes more of Kentucky's needs than were in the last budget.
It has always struck me, these people who trust in the Laffer curve, and if we cut taxes, it will increase revenue. It's always struck me as a religious thing. It's a faith-based approach. No one has ever shown that cutting income taxes increases your state's revenue. It's bizarre that they continue to say that. And it seems to me, it's either that they really want to reward their donors, which we talked about, or they really don't like government. I mean, they're working in it, but they really don't believe that government has any role to play in people's everyday lives. And I'm hopeful that enough people will figure out that, hey, you're hurting me and my children, that they will go to the legislators and say, no, don't do this. The other thing that I think is interesting that you've been saying is what the money could be used for. I mean, people talk about, well, okay, we're cutting taxes. That's great. Well, that means that your band and orchestra program is going to be done away with, or your school won't have a guidance counselor, or your local hospital will fold and you'll have to drive 2 hours to go to a hospital. These are the sorts of stories that we need to tell people and help them understand this is what this is going to do. And let's not even talk about bridges and infrastructure then and that sort of thing. So you all do wonderful work, and it's analytical and so on and so forth. What sort of reaction or what sort of response have you gotten when you've shared this data with state legislators?
Well, no one has told us that we're incorrect. For example, around the school funding trends, what's been going on. I don't think there's anybody who's able to deny. I think it's just a question of priorities. But I think there are a lot of lawmakers, particularly when you look at the makeup of the legislature. There are a lot of members of the GOP that are represent some of the poorest rural areas in the state, where the largest employers are the school system, the hospital and the doctor's offices, the community college, if they have one, community college branch, other, the public health department, other institutions, particularly those rural areas, have lost private sector employment, either through the loss of coal jobs, the loss of manufacturing jobs, and so forth. It's really a major driver of employment. I think there are a lot of lawmakers who understand that and who are worried. And you saw a lot of the members of the majority party vote against private school tax credits when that came through, because they didn't see the benefit to their communities, where everybody goes to the local public school. So I think there is an undercurrent that is not stated publicly sometimes, of understanding. One of the big issues now is that there's a lot of federal infrastructure money available for things like cleaning up abandoned mine lands, or putting up, cleaning up oil and gas wells, or just improving the infrastructure of your community. But in a lot of cases, you have to have matching money. That's another need that, not to mention the staffing to provide to apply for this money. That's another need in the next budget for those rural areas in particular. And those could be real job creators, but we need to tap some of the $5 billion that may soon be $8 billion sitting in that rainy day fund to provide those rural areas with that assistance. So, I think that there's a way in which the conversation becomes rhetorical and political, where people may engage in that, but there's a community reality that I think many also understand. And again, I think that's why they couldn't cut the budget more last time, and why the income tax cuts didn't trigger. It's just there was not the will there to do what some people's ideology would say they should do, which is to shrink government down to nothing. There already is not the will to do that. And so I think that's hopeful and promising for where we might go in terms of thinking about how to reinvest in some of these things.
I know that some groups are collecting stories. They use stories to, make their point. Are there stories we can tell or gather about the effects of these cuts over the years? The only thing I've got in the back of my mind is the Keys money. Every budget cycle, it seems to me, they brag about record Keys funding. And I always say, well, what is it in light of inflation? If you adjust for inflation, what is it? And you can correct me if I'm wrong. I think that our Keys funding is still lower than it was 20 years ago. Yeah. Once you adjust for inflation, it seems to me there are stories like that that you could tell people.
Absolutely. And I think part of it is making the connection in people's lives to the state budget, which they don't necessarily understand. I mean, in the case of students, for example, there are over 600,000 Kentuckians who owe student loan debt. And you brought up college students. That's the extent of that debt, and the existence of that debt is in large part because of disinvestment in higher education at the state level. So there have been cuts to the budgets. There's not only has the scholarship money not kept up with inflation, but the funds to the institutions themselves has been cut back dramatically by about a third. And they have increased tuition as a result, and that's turned into student loan debt that some people carry for decades. And it hinders your ability to buy a house, save for retirement, save for your own kids' college education, start a business. It's something that weighs a lot of people down. But as people are busy living their lives, they don't necessarily understand that the reason the UK costs so much is in part because of the disinvestment in those institutions. When folks who were older than me went to those institutions, they paid little to nothing. So it hasn't always been this way. That's just one example. And I think that, when you look at trying to afford childcare and you can't either find a childcare center or can't afford the payments, that is directly related to the state budget and how much money we put into childcare. You can essentially walk through every part of every person's life and often find at least one or two steps removed, the one or two steps removed from decisions about funding through the state budget. So it's but you know, that takes some education. It takes some conversation for people to understand how all that works.
Well, I have one story I can share with you that you are welcome to use. I went to a dinner last night with my very small city commissioners. And at the dinner, we were talking, you know, about what our families were doing. And the gentleman next to me, who's a U of L graduate, has his son is going to Alabama. And I said, why did he go down to Alabama? Surely that's more expensive with out-of-state tuition. He said, no, Alabama is cheaper than go, even with out-of-state tuition, is cheaper than going to any of the schools in the state. And he said, it's two reasons. One is their tuition is lower. And two is they have more aid. They have more scholarships. And so he's going to Alabama because it's cheaper than going to UK or U of L. So here's a bright, you know, scholastic star that we lost. He's gone to another state and he may or may not come back to Kentucky. We don't know. But that just struck me. I just like, really? And he was like, no, it's not even close. It's dramatic. So there's an example.
Yeah. I mean, these things have, you know, consequences that like that we don't always understand or recognize. But, you know, part of having a good economy is having a good quality of life. And you know, and I think we have to make sure we invest in those amenities and that access to education, access to healthcare. You know, one of the big reasons we have such a, you know, Kentuckians on average live 6 years, die 6 years earlier than they do in the most prosperous states in our country is those states, you know, invest more in healthcare. They
right.
make sure that they have a higher quality of life. So those things can really make a difference. But if you neglect them for long periods of time, like we have, and if you threaten them even more, which we're doing it in this, which we will continue to do if this idea about marching to zero on the income tax continues, it's hard to imagine us being able to make progress. In fact, it's easy to see us continue to go backward.
So what can we do? We are coming into the holidays when nobody wants to think about politics or anything like that. The general session starts right off in January. I'm assuming, because this is the way it usually works, that they will present a budget before the governor has a chance to present his, which I think is tacky, but that's a different problem. And then they will say they're working on it, and then all of a sudden here it will be. What can we do as citizens who see this problem to change it or stop it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most important thing is to communicate with your lawmaker. I mean, they're going to be involved in crafting this budget. The Senate and the House will have to work out their differences. So this usually goes till mid-April until they pass a final budget. And so there are opportunities to weigh in. They need to hear from folks who can tell the kind of stories that we've been talking about how a lack of investment is holding their community back, or how doing more could really be a positive thing. So we're going to be creating some opportunities for people to send emails to their lawmakers to sort of communicate that message. I think that's probably the most important thing, phone calls and emails. But there are other ways that people can get involved, including going up to Frankfort to lobby, participating in other lobby days that organizations have that have budget requests. We need to try to put into the center of the conversation the fact that the little known fact that the money is there to do a lot more. It hasn't been there for most of the past few decades, but it is there now. And it's being squirreled away and it's sitting idle for more tax cuts down the road that don't go back to the same folks who would benefit from all these from investments in public services. And that's most of us. It goes disproportionately to people who need it least. And we have the opportunity now in this session. This is maybe the most important one for that, because the money is there. And if we can get more reinvested, then that will help sustain that in the future and maybe put us back on a better trajectory of understanding and prioritizing the importance of education, the importance of healthcare, the importance of infrastructure to a good quality of life in a thriving Commonwealth.
So is there anything that you wanted to talk about that I haven't asked you about?
Well, I think that's the central issue. I mean, I will say that the other related issue that maybe is going to be considered this session has to do with whether there'll be a constitutional amendment to allow funding for private schools, which would be essentially a new budget item. You know, so on top of sort of the priorities we already had, we would be adding funding for essentially another system of private schools. And you'll recall that the state Supreme Court ruled unanimously last year that state funding for private schools is unconstitutional, because we actually have a really strong commitment in our Constitution to the funding for the system of common schools. So to change that would require a constitutional amendment. So this debate over school funding and over public funding for things that we all need is going to be front and center, maybe not just during the session, but throughout the rest of the year as we go into head into November. So it's a really important time, I think, for people to understand what's happened to school funding over the past few decades. And we have reports on our website that describe that. Folks can learn more, help other people understand more, help people understand what's at stake, both with if we continue to see teachers and bus drivers and leave the profession and not come into the profession because the pay is not there, or the working conditions are not there. The lack of respect is not there for public education. And what it would mean if we were to divert even more of that money to private schools. These are big choices that are in front of the legislature right now and over the next few years.
All right. Jason Bailey from Kentucky Center for Economic Policy, thank you so much for your time. I will include some links in the notes for the show so people can go to your site and gather information and talking points, and maybe we can get this to not be this way, and maybe we can get them to show some common sense about the use of the money. Thank you again for your time.
Yeah, thanks, Bruce.
That was Jason Bailey, the Executive Director of the Kentucky Center for Economic Policy. I really want to thank Jason for his time, but especially for the work he and his team do in trying to bring sanity and reasonableness and actual data to the discussions around economic policy in our state. I hope that some of the legislators, or maybe all of the legislators, will pay attention to the data that they have provided and will not chase this silly idea of stuffing more money in the mattress when we don't need to and when there are real needs across our state. Again, I urge you to click the subscribe button below. And if you are watching this on YouTube or on our website, there will be some links below that you can click to go to the KSEP site and gather some more information. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you in the next video.